Hey, you going to the game tonight? Of course you are. It's that time of year. Basketball aplenty, wrestling season in full swing, and a little reminder about sportsmanship. It's all coming up on OSAA Today, the podcast. Come on in, put your coats over there. If there's not enough hangers, just put them on the chair. This is OSA Today, the podcast on the iHeartRadio app and RipCityRadio.com. I'm Bob Akamian, and thanks for being with us. Basketball season rolling along through the month of January, and it's time to bring in the experts to try to make some sense of who's going to be playing for the Big Blue Trophy in March. We are very fortunate to be able to visit with Nick Robertson, the legendary former McMinnville and Beaverton High School coach. He is very much involved in the sport, helps put on the Northwest Shootout All-Star Series every spring, and he's out watching games all week long. Let's check in with Nick now.
First thing, Nick, tell me what's exciting you about Oregon high school basketball this week.
Well, you know, we just came out of our tournaments over Christmas, and you know, you got a real look from the Les Schwab tournament. We had two different Les Schwab tournaments, and you get a real look at who the number one people are in the state, and it's kind of exciting to see. Okay, you know, how will Jefferson improve down the line? If they get better and better, they could be dominant. You've got really good teams around. You've got excellent, you know, juniors. I think the thing that the state's most excited about is you got Ben Gregg at Clackamas, who, you know, in my mind might be the next Dunleavy. I mean, he's really, really a great player overall. Can play the point, wing, post. You got the kid, it's Biddle at Crater, that's 6'11", and you know, you can't teach size, you know. And plus, he's a nice athlete. He's getting, you look at those, you go, wow, we got two of the best. And then Jeff has a freshman kid, and there's a lot of young kids around. I know Westland has a young guard and a freshman playing for them. Tigard has a couple of freshmen playing on the varsity. So it's kind of neat to see all of a sudden we've got some really good young players in our state. Very exciting for the boys around. And
our highest-ranked teams, especially in 6A, too, have several losses this year, and that's a real statement to the quality of schedules that people went out and played. Jefferson went to a Hawaii tournament, plays them a Schwab. Central Catholic played them a Les Schwab. West Lynn, a very young team that showed tremendous presence. Lake Oswego has a losing record, but they're going to be a player in their league. But our good teams are going out, and they're challenging themselves.
Yeah, there's no question. Things have really changed. Every, you know, your good programs go out and play really good people because they know it really pays off in the RPI when you come down to the end. If you've played good people, even if you lost to them and they keep winning, you're going to rise up in the rankings somewhat. Yeah, with the, you know, what's happened over the years, Bob, is with the all the good tournaments around that you can get into. Very seldom do you see an Oregon team undefeated, okay? And I guess I should mention that because my McMinnville team still holds a record for 39 in a row. And that's because, well, there was no Les Schwab tournament where you had to play national teams. Now, you know, even your best schools are probably not going to go through and be 27-0 or 28-0 and win the state title because they're going to go get tested very well. So I think it's great for basketball in this state.
And, of course, I think the teams like it, and certainly the players like it because, you know, even when you're playing against a superior team, I mean, you ask any athlete, they want to play against the best. It's fun to be on the court against an Oak Hill or Norcross, one of those schools.
Well, I think that what kids, I remember my team played against Durant, okay, when he was at, I can't remember the name of the school, it'll come to me in a minute, but it was an academy, and, you know, I had a good team. We were down like 30. They had three great guards in him. And after the game, I just explained, well, you guys, that'll be a thrill for you someday because that guy's liable to be a great player. I think, and a lot of kids look at the tournaments that way. Wow, they want to play against Oak Hill because maybe two or three Oak Hill's guys might play in the NBA someday. So you bet. It's it's really fun for the kids. And, you know, when you go to a really good tournament, if you come out 2-2, you're doing cartwheels. You're feeling pretty good about yourself. So, you know.
And then Wes Lynn is interesting. Eric Mukula has come back. Of course, he has that great pedigree coming from Astoria. He took a little break to watch his kids play ball. He's got this young team, but with his track record, I don't think we should be surprised if the Lions get right back into the thick of things.
Yeah, no question. Eric, I mean, I even had him way back when he was a kid. We took him on a summer trip. He was a great competitor, and he's still the same way. I love to go to his practices and watch his kids, because I watched them in the Les Schwab, but they're a nice-looking young team. They really space the floor out well and do some things really, really well off the ball. They do some things really well off the ball and great cuts. So, yeah, they'll be a real factor. And you know, that league lately has probably been the strongest league, the Three Rivers. So they'll be right in it, I'm sure.
In 5A, and you touched on Crater a little bit, there's some pretty solid programs. Familiar names up top with Churchill and Wilsonville, Silverton, Milwaukee, and those league races just starting to shape up. When you talk about pound for pound in football, everybody says, well, this starting 11 could play with that starting 11, but the bench would make a difference. But is there a difference, really, 5A to 6A in basketball in our state?
Well, I think every, any time you go 5A or to 6A or 4A to 5A, there's a small difference, yes. But, when Ben Gregg was playing at a smaller school, he made them pretty dang good, okay? So if you have good players like Churchill and you have good players like Wilsonville, and both of them are extremely well coached, they can compete with anyone. They can compete at any level. I think just size of school makes a difference. If you've got a school of 800 versus a school of 1500, you got a few more bodies to choose from. So it does make a difference. But those two schools this year, I've seen Crater, haven't seen Silverton, and I've heard good things about Milwaukee. But you get top coaches, and the state of Oregon has good high school coaches. I think that's one of the things that I think makes the Les Schwab tournament so good, is that people come in from these out-of-state schools, and boy, I'll tell you what, they better strap it on or they're going to get beat by somebody that plays hard, like, Lake Oswego had, I think, a Bishop Gorman down at halftime because they play so hard, and obviously their size wore them down a little bit at the end. But I just think Oregon has really solid coaching, really do.
Well, we'll finish up with a thought about coaching. I had a chance this past week to visit with the great Bill Cartwright, who is now a special assistant at the University of San Francisco. And for you young people out there, he was a great NBA center with the Chicago Bulls and, of course, a huge high school athlete in the state of California in both basketball and baseball. He was a baseball pitcher at 6'10" back in the 70s. And he was lamenting, both looking at college and professional basketball, the sameness of coaching and the way the game is played nowadays, that there's far too much of putting players into systems. And he believes very much in the skill of the player and finding that space for that. What's your thought on that?
Well, I agree with the sameness of the systems. When you watch college basketball, which I watch a lot of, and I watch a very little bit of the NBA and watch a lot of high school, but most of them are running some high post screen and roll. Some fact, they run some weave, they run some high post screen and roll. Everybody's doing the same thing, but it's still all about spacing. And I think, we have some great college coaches in our own state. And, I remember, I was around a lot when Ralph Miller was here, and Ralph was all about spacing. There were no screens on the ball. It was all about spacing and getting the ball in the post, high, low in the post. You had Charlie sitting at the high post, and you had big Steve Johnson to low post, and Radford Bloom and those kind of guys, and Lester Connor. So, it was just spacing. And now it's all about screen on the ball. And, Stockton and Malone kind of started that, I guess, at Utah. But, Stockton could make that pass. You just don't see a whole ton of guys that ever make that pass. It's still all about getting into gaps and creating a shot for the next guy. I think that's what it's all about. So, I agree on the sameness. It drives me crazy to watch every night that you're going to watch high post screen and roll on every play, And so I guess they just figure once that guy comes off and the point guard comes off and beats the hedge by the post, he gets in the gap and feeds somebody, and you've got what you want. I think that's what coaches are thinking. But, yes, it seems the same every night when you watch basketball.
Always good thoughts from Nick Robertson, and we'll hear more from him as we work our way through the season towards the state tournament. You know, as always, the front page of OSA.org, you've got the links to all of the great storytelling by our writers on OSA Today, led by Jerry Ulmer. He's got a piece on Amity boys basketball, PIL football, and Mac High girls basketball, and of course, the latest polls, both boys and girls, for the week of January 13th and 14th. The girls' 6A basketball poll is out. It is compiled by Glenn Lee, the coach over at Mountainside High School. Mountainside is ranked third right now. Beaverton remains on top of the pack with its 7-4 record. Kathy Narrow's got a pretty good group together, and a lot of people think it is their year to win Oregon's 6A championship. We caught up with Coach Narrow recently.
A lot of people are talking about Beaverton, third place in the state last year, bringing so many people back. What are your real hopes for what this team can do?
I just really hope that we can be the best version of ourselves. Like tonight, for example, I don't think we were. Mm-hmm. And we have glimpses and possessions and times where we look really sharp, but I want it to be at a consistent level. I want us to be the best versions of ourselves for a full game, I mean, as we finish the season.
And you're able to go pretty deep already with your bench, and you got players that have the tournament experience. So you have a lot of tools. It's just a matter of putting them all together.
Yeah, putting all the pieces together and believing in each other. And I think I've got some very high achievers that have a tendency at times to question themselves if something doesn't go right. And hopefully learning that sometimes you're going to miss a shot, but don't make that turn into two more misses, you know, and just so growing in that way.
And then in that, you're also playing 2-3 freshmen
quite
a bit right now. And they have roles. I mean, they're in your rotation.
No, they're doing a really good job. They've come in and they're ready to go, and they really add a lot. And they've got great enthusiasm. Their chemistry that they've added to our team has been awesome.
I was going to say, you have one of the loudest benches I've seen this year for everything.
Yeah.
So
I want that. The girls are, for the most part, they're really great for each other and celebrate each other's successes.
Now, you're giving yourself a pretty tough non-league schedule,
yes.
And then you get into the Metro, which is a great test.
Yeah.
What's the Metro going to be like every night? I mean, we know you guys Mountainside, but it's deeper than that, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. No, it's going to be tough. And I think that, you know, it's funny, like, just even watching teams play in this tournament, you see things that everyone does well and things that everyone needs to work on. And I think our league's that way. So I think our league's open. It's wide open.
And finally, I got to ask you about coaching now. Three daughters to have this year with your youngest in that. How does that change the dynamic at home?
It's tough. Sometimes it's hard. You have to turn it off when we get home and just be mom and daughter. But sometimes we're all so into it, it's hard to not just go home and talk basketball. Yeah. So overall, it's been great.
Over in the 5A girls ranks, as expected, LaSalle and Wilsonville remain number 1 and number 2. They're getting ready for their first in-season meeting in Northwest Oregon Conference play. That will be on January 21st. They're both off to 9-2 starts as conference play begins. LaSalle was outstanding in non-conference play, advancing to the final of the Platinum Bracket at the Pacific Office Automation Holiday Classic. They beat 6A Mountainside and Sheldon along the way before losing to that outstanding team from Cashmere, Washington, who's a heavy favorite, of course, to win Washington's 1A title. Kelly Whedon, once again, has a very confident team as they chase another state title.
Well, there's enough pressure just having come back from the season you've had, and I don't think people understand how hard it is to do it again, especially with 17, 18-year-olds. How has your group been just in these first couple of months adjusting to being champions?
I think really good. I think that, you know, that's something that we talk about a lot. We're trying to just take one day at a time, one practice at a time, one game at a time, and not look at that, but obviously that is our goal. But you know, it's just about staying in the moment. It's about continuing to be a hunter instead of the hunted, and having that mentality, and just doing what we do, getting better every day, staying humble, and just really, really, really trying hard to stay focused mentally. I think that's the biggest thing, and not get comfortable and not get casual. And that it's hard to do. It's difficult with 16, 17, 18-year-old kids. But the girls are locked in, and they understand that they have an opportunity that no other LaSalle girls basketball team has had. Bless you. So, you know, that's special in itself, and it's, you know, something that they, I think, take pride in. They want to win that back-to-back, but they also understand that it really is a process, and it's a grind, and it's a long season, and so you really have to stay focused on just that day by day. For tonight, it's that first 4 minutes of the third quarter that, you know, so it's, we're really trying to, like, isolate, you know, every situation and just not taking anything for granted.
And, of course, you have a Niebuhr goal where competitiveness is bred in to the family.
It is.
And you have Addie back. And I'm sure that makes a big difference having those two.
It does. They're such good leaders. Lindsay Drango's our other senior captain leader. And they're all three. They're just so good to the young kids. We have a lot of young kids. I don't know that people know that. But half of our team is, you know, freshmen and sophomores. So just getting those girls to understand, you know, how we do things here. And their leadership and their competitiveness. Those two just, they rise to every occasion. They're fearless. They respect their opponents, but they get up for games like this. They love these kind of opportunities. And, you know, it makes our jobs easy as a coach because I know that they're going to kind of have that contagious energy throughout our whole entire team.
Now, playing in the Franklin tournament, you were conveniently able to avoid Wilsonville. Was set up that way,
yes.
But you've got this great league rivalry coming up. How do you see that playing out?
Oh, it's going to be a dogfight. You know, Justin Duke's done an awesome job at Wilsonville, and he's completely turned that program around. And, again, it's just it's a really healthy but competitive rivalry. And so I expect those two games to be really, really tough. I expect both of our teams to make it all the way to Gill. We're looking forward to that. Again, we love those kind of games, and we try to just stay focused and get better every day, no matter who we're playing, so that we're ready for those big games.
Wilsonville is looking forward to those matchups with LaSalle in league play. They've got a solid lineup, including four seniors and a very solid force in the middle in 6'2" junior Amelia Bishop.
Well, not to boil it all down to two games this year, but you guys are obviously very anxious to get out on the floor against LaSalle.
Yes, for sure. I mean, they're the only Oregon team that beat us last year. We beat them in their brick oven. If you guys don't know, that's their gym.
Yeah.
That's what we call it. And for this year, and then they beat us at home, and then they beat us in the state playoffs. But it was Wilsonville's first time making it to the state playoffs since 2012. So for us, that was huge. But seeing them again this year is really going to be like that revenge game. Like, there's nothing about them that, like, if we go out and play the way we play and we can play, there's nothing that they can really do to match up against us. I mean, they're an amazing team. They have amazing three-point shooters. But if they come out hard, we're both going to come out hard against each other. We're each other's rivals. Like, that's like the fact of the matter. But I think we're hungry for the win. We're hungry to go back to the state playoffs and hopefully win. And we plan to win. We don't want to.
And it's early already.
Yeah.
Now, talk about the backcourts, obviously, are an interesting matchup because you guys are so active, so aggressive defensively. They're very patient, and their guards get a lot done. So, I mean, something's got to give between those two groups.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for us, our defense hasn't always been our strong suit. I mean, the last 3 years, we've been the top offensive team. And so this year has definitely been, so far, like, we've really wanted to create more growth on our defensive side, and we have amazing defensive coaches, which has also really helped. So, like, Tyler Van Acker is really good about the one-on-one stuff, whereas Duke and Jay are really good about getting us into the spots we need to be, getting into passing lanes, and we how to anticipate what's going to happen, how to communicate. And, like, for us, that's our biggest flaws. We're kind of quiet, and so right now we're working on communicating with each other at a higher rate to be more efficient, I guess, against teams that want to pull it out and have those minute-long offensive,
what LaSalle does. They'll wait and wait and wait, and
there's
then they'll
really
cut to the hoop.
And so that's what we're working on, is having that stamina to really keep them from when they decide to drive not letting them, I guess.
You guys get to play in the Franklin Tournament against Oregon 6A schools, Washington 4A schools. Yes. That's pretty good stuff for Don Lake.
Yes. I mean, it's such an honor to be one of the only two 5A teams even invited. And I mean, that just says a lot about the growth we've had as a program and how, just like as a team, we've really started to come together and put the pieces together to have every part of our offense and defense and our being able to bring our bench in and not just have like six players. And having that depth, I think, is something that is really beneficial to us. But coming to this tournament, we knew like we're going to be up against the best teams in the state. And our when we lost Westland a couple weeks ago, and that really was what lit the fire in us to be like, we're not going to let this happen again. Like, we don't want to go up against these good teams and feel scared and nervous. We're going to go out and we're going to be as aggressive as we can, because that, like, when there is teams that have slightly better matchups than we do, we just have to hone in on our defense and hope the offense comes and, like, let it flow, I guess.
And again, all the statewide coaches polls are updated right now at osaa.org. Wrestling season is in full swing around the state of Oregon, and all eyes will be on Deschutes County this weekend as the Oregon Wrestling Classic takes center stage. Everyone who's anyone will be on hand, and no one more so than Culver High School, the small school dynasty built by J.D. Alley, who's now in his 30th year coaching at the school. Culver has won 12 of the last 13 state titles, and this year's group shows little sign of slowing down.
You've got a great young group this year. I think 7 athletes who are ranked, and they're all underclassmen. How excited are you about them?
Oh, very, very excited. Graduation was pretty hard on us in terms of quality. Lost really good seniors that we had come to count on for a long time. But glad to see some of these younger guys coming up and contributing and finding their way. And, you know, we're not quite to replacing some of those seniors yet, but, maybe someday.
Yeah. How much, I mean, you have such a great tradition there. How much do you rely on guys to set the pace? And, we'll start with Lane at 138. You know, he's your returning champion. He's up at 145 now. Does it just come natural that guys like that set the pace in the room?
You know, I think that's kind of the way it is now. We're you can call it leadership, whatever. We're trying to build those kind of older kids, more seasoned veteran kids, or and sometimes it's even a younger kid, but that sets the bar, whether that's their passion, their work commitment and desire and effort, and and we're trying to get other people to follow that person's lead. It's a little harder. I've been at this quite a while. My belly's pretty big, my whiskers are pretty white, and we lean really hard on some of those kids that have some previous accolades in their history and that are just really passionate in wrestling. They just live for it, and we try to use that to our advantage and see if that will soak in on some of those younger kids. And one day those younger kids will grow up and a couple of them will be that go-to guy. You know, that is kind of the plan.
You've got, I want to ask you about young guys you're excited about now. And I think of Isaiah Toomey, who's sophomore, and he's ranked number one in the state right now at 160.
Yeah, Isaiah's, he was a great contributor for us last year, and expect good things for him. He's it's tough is when you're a young guy and you're in those upper weight classes, you don't get to wrestle very many freshmen. That's different than somebody in the bottom third of the weight line. A 6-pounder can almost always guarantee to wrestle an underclassman most of the time. But so Toomey's had to work his butt off to earn that ranking, and he's a great kid in the classroom, and he has emerged as one of our leaders as only a sophomore. He's exactly one of those kids we're talking about. So,
Now you obviously get continuity, with the tradition of the wrestling. But where do your wrestlers come from? How
far down? Are you rounding them up when they're kids and getting them in club wrestling?
Oh, you know, it just varies. There are kids that that enter our mat club program probably younger than they should be. We've got a whole slew of fourth graders. We've got kids in our middle school that have never wrestled before, and we've had a. It seems like every year we're dragging people out of the hallway and in the high school level, even. We'll have some of those that have never seen the mat before, or at least are new to us. Every now and again, somebody moves in from out of the area. That hasn't happened this year, but it's a mix. You know, you've got some kids that have been wrestling since they were barely walking, and you've got some kids that have hardly ever seen the mat, and it there's good and bad with everything. Some of those really green kids don't have a lot of bad habits, and teach them a couple things and go a long ways, particularly at our level.
And it's funny you talk about hallway recruiting, and that you hear that a lot in high school sports. How do you pick out a wrestler as opposed to a basketball player who's tall, a football player who's just big? How do you see a wrestler?
I just take them all. It's pretty simple. You know, people want to put wrestlers in a cookie cutter prototype, phenotype, or they, you know, they want to stereotype them as just they're short and stocky. And, you know, some of the most dominant wrestlers are people with some long reach and leverage and some of those things. And wrestling has 14 weight classes. You know, we need the tiny guys, and we need the defensive tackles off the football team too. You know, we got to fill all of them. You know, it isn't always wrestling. Isn't always their passion when they walk in the room. We try to make it everybody's passion before they walk out. But you know, at the very least, we're gonna make football players better football players if they wrestle, and they're gonna help us. You can't pick one out. You know, they just gotta. There's somebody coined the phrase that, you know, successful wrestlers and champions. They get good at being comfortable in uncomfortable situations. We don't care how fast they can run a 40 or how much they can bench press. We just want kids that kind of thrive on adversity and don't crumble and you know, like the physicality of our sport. So
where do you think your team fits in? You're predictably ranked number one as a team in your classification with Vernonia, Pine Eagles, Central Lynn in that top group. Is that who you expect to see ultimately in the Coliseum?
I think we'll probably see Reedsport in that mix somewhere. Reedsport's got some pretty good talent that's going to be on the state podium, scoring pretty good points. You know, there's different ways you score points in state, and score with depth, with top and talent. But I really don't get hung up a lot in ranking. It's pretty easy to rank the Bulldogs number one with the success almost leads. But sometimes that's a curse. And there's a lot of solid programs that are in that mix. I think you named quite a few of them. And there's some programs that just want to keep kids with some dangerous people that could derail us if given the chance. So, I don't know. I
ask you the week of state, and you'll
ask
have a
me the week
feel
after
when you
state.
See seeding after state.
Ask me the week after. You know, it's just your cohort there that does the polls. He's always mad at me because he. I've never voted in those polls, and I'm not going to. So I wouldn't want to vote myself number one, and I wouldn't want to vote myself anything less than number one. So I wouldn't feel right either way. So
okay, there you go.
So that's what I think of polls, anyway.
So I know all wrestling people are fans of the sport, and they love seeing great competitors. When you're at the Classic next week, who else around the state who excites you as either an athlete or a team you look forward to seeing?
Oh, you know, the Classic is such a different atmosphere because it's the dual meet, and what sets the dual meet apart and what makes the Classic unique isn't state tournament. that we're talking about will be won by top end wrestlers and higher talent, particularly as we move on and we get to the finals. It's, you know, it's going to be the best against the best. And but in a, and even in a championship classic duel, sometimes it comes down to matchups, and you might have two kids that barely have 500 records and that square up against each other, or you might have a kid that's not very good that just doesn't get pinned by the other team's state champ. And everybody has an opportunity to contribute in unique ways, and the fans and the crowd, they can just rally around those things. It's such a different atmosphere that it's really good. But you know, there are teams that their fans and are used to dual meets, and they fill lineups up that travel really well across all the classifications. You know, at the top level, you think of your Newbergs and your Rosebergs, and you move down, and we have a 5A Cook County that's awful tough. It's just down the road, and their fans are phenomenal. You know, they'll fill the seats. And move into the 4A ranks, and you got a Sweet Home and a Tillamook, and Sweet Home, it's just, they have the great fans. And Tillamook's last year's defending champs, and kind of newcomer in LeGrand, and they've had success on the football field this year and won a state title, and they're carrying a lot of confidence into that. And you know, we can just trickle down 3A has a defending state champ in Lapine there, and some solid the usual suspects, and well, Burns is putting a group together, and you know, it's just everybody's, you know, every classification has that group of people that just almost bring 100 people through the door, and they're there to root for their team. It's really unique in Central Oregon. There's some awful good wrestling going on in Central Oregon right now between the, you know, you got the Cook County Cowboys that have been a solid program forever, you know, longer than I've been alive. Lapine is putting some things together, and Mountain View is a top ranked team, and you got us and Redmond's. There's nothing to matter with the Redmond Panthers, and you know, we're all within a 30-minute drive of that venue. So, packing a lot of good people in there, and it's a tremendous opportunity when that got moved into Central Oregon for Central Oregon wrestling, and it's really competing at a high level. There's some awful good wrestlers in the Central Oregon area.
The Oregon Wrestling Classic will take over the Deschutes County Fair and Expo Center in Redmond Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and we'll have a recap for you next week right here on the pod. This is OSA Today, the podcast, on the iHeartRadio app and ripcityradio.com/OSA Today. I am Bob Akamian, and now it's time for a few words from Peter Weber, the executive director of the Oregon School Activities Association. Sportsmanship is always front and center on our minds as we take part in or attend high school sporting events around the state of Oregon. And Peter has more about more recent initiatives in promoting good sportsmanship.
You know, Bob, we had a sportsmanship committee for a long time back when I started, you know, 20 years ago. And then it kind of went dormant for a while and fell off the radar. And we brought it back. I think the main focus is just to kind of up the awareness around what the expectations are for people. Obviously, we've had some well-documented issues at some events the last couple of years. And I think it's important for people to remember, you know, why we're out there, why the kids and coaches are out there, why we as supporters, parents, or spectators are out there encouraging people, you know, to do their best, and just those reminders about keeping things on a positive level and rooting for your team as opposed to rooting against the other team, some of those types of concepts. And so getting that group back together, we've changed their structure just a little bit, added in, we actually have some students that are involved helping provide that student perspective, and really just trying to, again, raise that awareness and set the expectations so that people can meet them.
And you're really making an effort to get the word out for before events. It's not just having an administrator watch the student section during a game. You have sportsmanship flyers that kind of outline expectations that could be posted in schools. And then several pregame guidelines as well you've got out there.
Yeah, it's something that, again, as part of our renewed focus, coming out of last year's legislature with House Bill 3409, that set some parameters for organizations like the OSAA to make sure that they had clear-cut policies regarding what the expectations are, if those expectations aren't met, what types of things need to be addressed, et cetera. So something that, we've really put a focus on this year. We started out back in August with our schools. We have administrator workshops, as you know, every typically athletic director in the state, but somebody from each school attends. We go over new rules, old rules, and emphasis, and certainly this was the major part of that for this year. Spent some time taking people through the why of why we're doing this work and why it's so important, and then following that up prior to the start of the contest in the fall with some a new required pre-contest public address announcement that really just, as you said, sets the tone early. This is what the expectation is. This is where we're trying to be. And if people aren't able to meet that, then there's going to be some consequences for them.
And then just under the, you know, the title of welcoming environment, you know, some other simple ideas for schools like make sure everybody knows where to sit, make sure it's clearly marked where the bathrooms are, which way back out to parking, things like that.
Well, I think sometimes what happens over time, especially when you have administrators and people who've been around for a long time, you get caught up in, hey, we've been doing this, we know how to do it, and sometimes it's nice to take a fresh look. And we've had some schools doing some great work out there, just in, as you said, in welcoming people to their facilities, making sure that when somebody comes through the door, they know where to go. You know, things that you don't think about very much, signage. You mentioned, you know, here's where the restrooms are, here's the concessions, here's where the visiting fans, parents, and students are going to sit. Having that communication between schools beforehand, again, you know, especially in non-league contests, but even sometimes in league contests, making sure that you're renewing those relationships and engaging the other school, engaging your own student leaders, again, to be positive rather than negative, and basically just trying to work together. One of the things that we've heard consistently as we've kind of embarked on this specifically this year from schools and from spectators as well is to have that consistent messaging. So if I'm hearing the same thing in the gym at Tiger that I'm hearing in a gym in Eugene or in Southern Oregon or in Eastern Oregon, those things help. Having that consistent messaging, that consistent expectation has been a real positive thus far.
And I think every school in the state is getting the new sportsmanship banner. A lot of people seeing that already and kind of those key points for anybody coming to an event. We cheer for our athletes. We support our coaches. And I know a big piece these days is stay off the officials, because officials retention and recruiting new officials is such a key piece right now all over the country, not just here in Oregon. But, you know, the things that to keep people from wanting to officiate, it's not necessarily the highly publicized incidents. It's the steady drumbeat of negativity you can hear sometimes. And that's important to make sure we have enough and quality officials at events.
It is. It is. And it's something that, you know, it takes a village. We need to all be working on that together. Certainly the spectators, our on-site event management with administrators and things like that. And it's important that they have a good relationship with the officials to take care of them and make sure they know that it's important that we do treat them well. As you said, our numbers across the state, you know, are continuing to be in a situation where it's fairly dire in some parts of the state in terms of numbers and contests having to be rescheduled because there simply aren't enough people. And the thing we hear from exit surveys of officials, not just in Oregon, but around the country, always comes back to, you know, they're just not being treated well in a lot of cases. And so anything that we can do to help with that, again, set those expectations and then certainly hold people to them is going to help with keeping the officials we have and hopefully recruiting some new officials out there, some younger officials, ideally, to get them involved and into something where they're supporting their local communities and giving back to the game that probably gave them so much moving forward. So.
And I think a really nice two-way component of this, it's not just telling people what's expected, but this sportsmanship award, which is now available, that officials can basically nominate either one team or the other or an athlete, but to basically give back an attaboy for where they feel there was excellent conduct or, you know, above and beyond sportsmanship at a game. And it's a nice surprise for a school, whether it's the home or visitor, to get that award back from the officials after a contest?
Well, so much of what we hear, and we're guilty of this as well, you know, from our office, it tends to focus on the negative. Don't do this, don't do that. It's nice to have an award like this, a sportsmanship nomination form for officials, where we're really trying to emphasize that positive relationship between schools and teams and coaches and our officials. And this past fall, I think a year ago in the fall, we had about 80 or so nominations for fall teams for good sportsmanship, and this year we're up close to 200. So we're getting the word out to officials. They're recognizing teams and players and coaches, and in some cases even you know, fans for doing great work at events and really getting back to the core of what we're about. I mean, we're education-based athletics and activities, and it's important that we remember that we want to make sure that the environment that we're providing for players, for coaches, certainly for spectators and officials, is a safe and respectful one so that everybody can just enjoy the contest.
At the end of each season, the sportsmanship committee will choose a winner in each sport, and you'll get a banner to hang in the gym, and you'll get 100 points in the OSA Cup. So it's a pretty good incentive that by being good sports and being proactive in that way, you could actually help yourself win the OSA Cup.
Absolutely, absolutely. We thought it was important to tie that into – to one of our award programs, and you know, it's been well received. So from our perspective, anytime we can be promoting the work that schools are doing, we want to do that. And it's been a nice way to recognize some programs, again, in some cases programs that maybe aren't, you know, winning state titles or making it to the state playoffs, or in some cases even have winning records. But again, as education-based activities, we're more than just that. It needs to be about the full experience, and a coach and a program that puts an emphasis on being good sports as well as competing is something that we definitely want to recognize.
And one other little piece of this, and it's very near and dear to the hearts of us announcers who work events, is including a pronunciation guide in the programs. The OSAA posts rosters on the website, and they're available to everybody to print out and have at events. And, of course, it's very helpful to us, but there's another reason behind providing pronunciations on rosters.
Yeah, it's something, again, as we've gone through this past fall and into the winter, that we've heard from schools. A couple of member schools reached out and said, you know, one of the things that they struggle with is getting to an event, typically, you know, going to an away game, and they get there and the public address announcer, you know, doing the best that they can, we'll just butcher kids' names, you know, unintentionally, but, you know, that's not good for kids. That's not good for their families and their communities. And so we went and looked at what some colleges had done in regards to pronunciation guides, and were able to take the rosters that we already have and add a section for correct pronunciation. So schools that want to do that can go in and add that information. And then on the media rosters that the people download, typically the PA announcers are using, they have that information so that we can pronounce kids' names correctly. I think it's, again, one of those little things that maybe you don't think about, but it's important. It's important to the student. It's important to their family and the school community. So it falls in line with some of the other work that we're trying to do. You know, we've added our pre-contest sportsmanship announcement on the website. We have that in a couple different languages, Chinese, Russian, Spanish, and Vietnamese. We also just recently worked with David Douglas High School to get audio recordings of that pre-contest announcement in all those languages as well, done by students. So it's something that we're really working on here at the OSAA as we look at the way we're approaching things from a sportsmanship and an equity standpoint. And we're excited about continuing to do those things and expand that in the future.
And again, nobody appreciates the pronunciation guides more than me and my fellow announcers. That's all the time we have for the pod this week. Get on out there and enjoy all the great Oregon high school sports action in your community. We'll be back here next week to talk about it on OSAA Today, the podcast.